Joy Shadell. She is currently research coordinator in the Division of Comparative Effectiveness and Decision Science. I like that title. In the Department of Population Health in the School of Medicine of New York University. She received her Master's of Public Health and Epidemiology from the University of Florida College of Public Health and Health Professions and the College of Medicine in 2013.
Good afternoon. Can you all hear me? Okay. So my name is Joy. I'm very excited to talk to you today about some work that we conducted while I was a student at the University of Florida regarding the independent and synergistic effects of low education and poverty on sexually transmitted infection in Haiti. And I have no relationships to disclose. So approximately 60% of Haitians currently live in poverty, which is below $1.25 per day. And though this varies as far as the gender distribution, it does appear that in urban regions, more female-headed households are considered to be extremely poor compared to those headed by men. And poverty is associated with STI and HIV risk, particularly for women. A lack of income increases the risk of multiple partnerships and engaging in sex trade. And functional indicators of poverty, such as food insecurity, are independently associated with HIV infection. And this may be because of financial dependence on a male partner creates a power imbalance in the relationship, where the female then is more likely to tolerate non-monogamy or is unable to negotiate for safer sex. And similarly, up to half of Haitian residents are illiterate, and it does appear that a larger proportion of women in Haiti are unable to read and write compared to men. And women face difficulties obtaining and continuing their education due to the cost, her family's need for her to work, or getting married at a young age. And educational attainment is also associated with STI and HIV risk. In other countries like Haiti, where there's a high burden of HIV and a lot of poverty, they found that each additional year of school reduces the hazard of HIV infection by about 7%, and education is also protective against some sexual risk behaviors. And education may be protective against sexual risk because those who are higher educated may be exposed to more health promotion messaging, or they may have increases in self-esteem or self-efficacy and can engage in protective behaviors. But there are significant gaps in the literature regarding economic vulnerability and STI-HIV. The most significant is that these factors are unique, but they're often examined together. Education is typically used as a proxy measure for poverty, despite evidence that these risk factors act through distinct pathways. And also, studies often focus on HIV infection, and there's little research on other STIs or sexual risk behaviors. So we felt there was a need to understand which factors are the most influential on sexual risk and when, in order to time and target interventions appropriately, especially in a country like Haiti, where there aren't a lot of resources. You want to get the most bang for your buck out of your interventions. So we aim to begin to attempt to address some of these gaps by looking at the independent and combined effects of low education and poverty on STI in Haiti. So from August to November of 2013, we recruited 200 pregnant women at least 18 years of age who were seeking antenatal care in Gracier, Haiti. We obtained informed consent in Haitian Creole, as well as administered a brief survey regarding their sociodemographics and sexual risk behaviors. And then we collected a small urine specimen that was tested for STI. From the survey, we have two measures of economic factors, the first being educational attainment, which we used as a dichotomous indicator of at least 12 years of schooling versus less. It's worth noting in Haiti, the mean number of years of school is only 4, but our population was in a more urban area. The mean number of years was 10, so we chose 12 to mark the completion of secondary schooling. And then we used a functional indicator of poverty, crowding or overcrowding, which is the per person per room in a dwelling. It's often operationalized as more than 2 people, which is what we used here. And then we combined these to create a categorical measure of neither low education or crowding, one of the risk factors, or both. Our participants on the survey reported some sexual risk behaviors that were prior, most regarding their sexual debut or first sexual intercourse, such as whether it was less than 18 years of age, which was the median in our sample, as well as whether a condom was used at that time. And for her current sexual risk behaviors, she reported the number of sex partners in the past year, whether she herself or her sexual partner were having sex with other partners. And then, as I mentioned, we used the urine specimen to test for 3 STIs, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and trichomoniasis, using nucleic acid amplification testing. And for this analysis, we have a dichotomous indicator of STI, so it was the presence of any of the 3 versus none. And we conducted all of our analyses using SAS 9.3, calculated descriptive statistics, and modeled our associations using logistic regression. In the multivariate models, we adjusted for age and the risk factor that we weren't measuring at that time. So basically, crowding, we controlled for education and vice versa. So among our 200 pregnant women seeking care in Gracier, Haiti, the mean age was 27.9. Approximately 63% had less than 12 years of school. Approximately 40% were experiencing crowding. About half had early sexual debut, and 94% didn't use a condom at that time. 24% of our participants approximately reported that her main sexual partner was having sex with others, while she herself, only 1%, reported that they were having other sex partners, and therefore our mean number of sex partners in the past year was 1.02, yet 29% of our participants were infected with at least one STI. And the following slides demonstrate the associations between the 2 economic factors and the sexual risk behaviors. So for early sexual debut, we see that those who had low educational attainment had about 2 times the odds of early sexual debut, whereas crowding was not significantly associated. Similarly, low educational attainment was associated with about 6 times the odds of not using a condom at first sex, where crowding, again, was not significant. We were only able to include whether her partner was having sex with other partners because our sample was relatively low risk. So we see here that for this, those who were experiencing crowding had about 2 times the odds of a non-monogamous main partner, where education was not associated with that outcome. And yet, the 2 economic factors are relatively similar. Both are associated with a little over 2 times the odds of a current sexually transmitted infection. And finally, when looking at the odds based on that combined risk factor, compared to women who had neither low education or crowding, women who had at least one of the risk factors had about 4 times the odds of currently being infected with an STI. And then when we look at women who have both low education and crowding, the odds of a current STI jump to almost 7. So in conclusion, we believe that our results indicate education and poverty appear to influence STI independently while also working together, and that low education may drive these early risk behaviors, whereas current socioeconomic status is more closely related to her current risk. But improving education may be particularly important to increasing risk awareness. One's early sexual experiences have the potential to set a pattern of sexual behavior throughout the life course. So if we can intervene on a woman early during these formative years, we can potentially prevent a trajectory of STIs throughout the life course. But future research in representative samples of Haitian women, including adolescents, is warranted to inform future potential interventions. Of course, we have limitations to this analysis. First of all, this was a cross-sectional study design. We relied on our participants' self-reported risk behaviors as well as those of her partners. We didn't interview her sexual partners. And one of the major things is because our sample was so low risk, it's worth noting that we were asking about the past year, and these are pregnant women, so the past year risk behaviors might not be representative of what she's typically doing because she is pregnant. And also, these findings might not be generalizable. As I mentioned, we were dealing with a higher educated sample compared to what is maybe going on in the rest of Haiti. And also, it was a very specific sample of pregnant women in one region. I'd like to acknowledge the Department of Epidemiology for their support at the University of Florida, and that STI testing is supported in part by a grant from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. And here is my contact information, and I would welcome any questions.
I think we're a fairly small group here, so I think we can probably take questions, a few, and then we can have a more substantive discussion afterwards. So, do you have any questions for Joy?
Yes.
So, for years of education, is that going to continue that grade, or the number of times you've been in school?
So, it was just the number. The question was this, had they completed that year, or that was how long they had been in school? It was the number of years that they had completed of school. It wasn't grades. It was just years total. I know that's an issue in Haiti, is repeating grades.
Yeah.
This was just the total number of years. So that might not have been the mark of completing secondary school.
Okay.
It was just the number of years.
Okay.
Yes. Wasn't linear in the log odds of our outcome, STI specifically. So we chose dichotomous just to deal with that lack of linearity, and that was the cut point we chose based on that.
And then also the same question for your perception of
experience.
Is that it just again
the before and after, but not the same thing? It was. A lot of our measures were not linear, so we just dichotomized them sort of for the sake of simplicity. But it's a good point. I mean, of course, you lose a lot when you dichotomize measures. That's true.
I just wanted to, I noticed that the STDs you tested for did not include syphilis.
Right.
Is that because of the added dimension of having to do a blood test, or?
So the clinic tested for syphilis and HIV. We didn't include that result here. These were just STIs that we were testing for as part of the study. So we do have the syphilis results. I just didn't include them in this analysis. But yes, the clinic tested for those, and we have those.
Okay, and you don't have any idea what the prevalence rate was?
It was low, surprisingly, but we were dealing with a lot of missing data at that time. There were some issues with the clinic, so that was another reason we weren't able to include them just time-wise, because we were trying to get those from health clinic. So.
And the other thing I was just very pleased to see that you, in your recommendations, was to look at the adolescent population. So I noticed that you were only looking at 18 and over, but then you say that
you
needed to look at the adolescent population. Okay, well, thank you very much, Joy.